Excellent. So welcome to the ongoing meditation class. For those who are coming for the first time, the introduction to meditation class is in the room to my right. This is the class for the experts, the adepts, those who just need a little bit more to get enlightened. Now, this is the class, again, for people who have been meditating before. So one of the reasons we do this is because, yes, for the people starting meditation, they need one type of teaching. And if you've been meditating a long time, you don't need the same teaching as you get at the very beginning. Sometimes you need a little bit more encouragement, a little bit deeper teachings, so that you can go further in meditation. And also, not just the type of teachings, but at the length of time we meditate for, because here we meditate for 45 minutes. And that's a long time for someone who's only just began to learn how to meditate. Their mind would usually just go off wandering, fantasizing, dreaming, planning, because they haven't got the training yet, to meditate for such a long time. So if you are coming for the first time, or the first couple of times, please, the room to my right, which is the beginner's meditation class. And don't ever think, oh, beginners, I'm much more advanced than that. That's called like spiritual pride. Sometimes that many people who have been coming here and they feel they need a top-up of the beginner's class, they go there and it really helps them. So, being a beginner is nothing to be afraid of or to be embarrassed about. It's sometimes just a very beautiful way of getting the fundamentals back again. So beginner's classes are great. But here we sort of teach a little bit more deeper into meditation. And I know that I always tend to talk about the early stages of meditation. And it's sometimes I neglect the deeper stages of meditation, which are really, really important. So when your mind does get a bit peaceful, and by here I mean you can just watch many breaths in a row, breathing in, breathing out. And the reason why you can watch many breaths in a row is because that you are content and happy. The cause of stillness in meditation, which is really important, stillness, the cause of stillness is letting go. And once one becomes still, one maintains that stillness from contentment, just being happy to be here, not wanting anything. And there's many similes. I can do this simile here because I've got my glass of water here, that if you can get into your heads that meditation is about being still, physically still, so you don't need to move, and mentally still, so you don't need to think. Incredibly still. And I usually use the simile of a glass of water trying to hold it still. And it is impossible to hold a glass of water still. Doesn't matter how hard I concentrate, how many years I train, the nature of the muscles in the arms are always moving. So you can never keep a glass of water still. So if that's my mind, and I'm trying to hold it still, I will always get frustrated. But there is a trick to making the glass of water perfectly still, and that is to put it down. Because when I put things down, when I let them go, when I stop grasping and holding things, the water becomes still all by itself, because that's its natural state. Its default state. We usually use that word these days. And that's the same with the human mind. Its natural state is to be still. But when we do stuff, we try and control it, make it still, worry about stuff, think about stuff, that is what stops the mind being still. So our job is just to let go and just allow the mind to be still. To get out of the way, to stop wanting stuff, stop doing stuff. Now, to be able to achieve that non-doing, it's important that we learn about how to be content, happy to be here. Unfortunately, human beings, we have to do this in the world. We always have to judge and measure and compare. We're always trying to achieve things, make things better. But in meditation, that's counterproductive. Don't try and make things better. That is endless. Don't try and improve. You just get worse the more you try to improve. Instead, just put it down. Let it be. Stop wanting anything and learn to be content right where you are, with what you have, with your stupid, dull, restless, crazy mind. Be content with your mind. Be content with this hall here. You know that we spent a lot of money years ago trying to design this hall, trying to find a place which was nice and quiet in the suburbs, not next to a busy road where most religious churches and organizations are. It does mean it's difficult to have parking and access, but we thought it's more important we have some quietness here. But then you try everything to make this nice and quiet, and what happens? The house behind decides to mow the lawn. They find out they want to sort of do some chainsaw repairs behind. Or they start a party at 3 o'clock. It doesn't matter what you do, and if you calm everything down outside, so there's no one making a noise, your neighbors are very quiet, then someone in here bursts out coughing. You know, it's not their fault. They don't deliberately come here with a cough with the purpose of disturbing everybody. It just happens, and that could be you. Or sometimes a mobile phone goes off. And I used to think only those people who've only come here for the first time, their mobile phone comes off. But then I open my eyes and look, it's one of these people who've been here for years and years and years, and they should know much better. But still, you forget. You know, it just is a mistake. These things happen, which means that we can't control our environment. We can do a lot, but there's a limit. But what we can do is to control our reactions. In other words, to let it be. And be content that there will be noise. Be content that sometimes it's too hot for you, sometimes too cold for you. I always sing with all the people who come here from all the different nations, there must be someone in this room is just the right temperature. For me, it's always cold or too hot. I'm never that lucky one, but one of you might just about get the right temperature. So, instead of just measuring and judging and complaining, we are content. Content and easily satisfied. Which means we can sit here because we're content and satisfied, no complaints. It means we have no business. When we have no business to do, then we can be quiet and peaceful and still. So we develop that mind of contentment and also of gratitude. You've managed to come to a place where you can quite safely meditate for 45 minutes. No one's going to disturb you. No one's going to say, hey, come and help me with something, because they don't value meditation. Sometimes that happens at home. You're meditating and somebody disturbs you. Come on, you're doing nothing. I need some help. It's important. Meditate later. I never think they can do the important stuff later. But here, this is a meditation hall. You got your cushions, you got me sort of guiding you, you got the energy of this place built up over the years. So you should be very grateful you managed to find time in life where you can actually meditate. Be so grateful, happy, just to be here. So everything else is just extra. So sometimes I remind myself that, even though I've been meditating a long time, even though I'm supposed to be a well-known meditation teacher, sometimes I just sit down, close my eyes, and at that point when my eyes close, this is good enough. I'm meditating. 45 minutes, no one's going to bother me. I just sit here, peaceful. Oh, what bliss. I don't ask for anything else. So you're contented. When you're contented, then there's no business and you're much more peaceful. The contentment helps that stillness. And that contentment, I'm asking you to maintain, guard, cherish for the whole of the meditation. It's one of the great keys, the great attitudes which go very, very deep into the mind. You're so content, happy to be here. You don't want anything in the whole world. If you, just by luck, you rubbed a bottle and a genie came out and said, according to the custom, I give you 3 wishes, what do you want? And you'll say, nothing. Go and ask somebody else. You're so content that even a genie will not be able to get any excitement out of you. That's called contentment. So, contentment, all stages in the meditation. You're sitting here, falling asleep. Be content. Because if you fight your sleepiness, it will get worse. Other people make noise. Be content. It's what people do. Somebody bangs the door, which they always do every Saturday, because they have to leave early. I don't know why, but I hope they're happy. So I'm just content. If I'm not content when they bang the door, this is usually what happens. Has it ever happened to you? You're just getting nice and quiet, and bang, they bang the door. Say, who was that? I'm going to find out who that is. I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm about that person. I'm going to get them banned. I'm going to put a photograph of them on every door so we can recognize them so they can't come in again. We're going to shame them. We're going to fine them. If they're a member of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, we're going to take away their membership. And straight away, the door has finished banging a long time ago. But the banging going on in my head goes on for 5-10 minutes. That's the big noise, the way we react and think about it. So when we're content, bang, it's gone. It doesn't echo in our mind, which means we're peaceful. So we learn how to be content no matter what happens. Contentment is another word for opening the door of my heart no matter what happens. Somebody coughs. Wonderful, they feel so much better now they've got that out of their throat. Oh, what joy that gives me. So little by little, we're so content, our mind becomes peaceful. And it's the peace, the stillness, the fact you're not doing work with your brain. The energy starts to arise. Mindfulness increases in its power. And with the increase in mindfulness, you get an increase in happiness. You get more joyful. Powerful mindfulness, happiness always go together. You wake up really aware. I don't mean opening your eyes, but inside, really get alive, happy and mindful. And that's a beautiful state in meditation. Really alert. See so much, and it's so delightful because your mind is now powered up from contentment. And you carry on that contentment. If you want to watch the breathing, which is part of it, it's so easy. Breathing in, breathing out, because it looks nice. The reason it looks nice is because your mindfulness is strong. When you've got strong mindfulness, whatever you look upon is delightful. You've heard me say that before when I was in my meditation retreat. Jhana Grove, went to the toilet, did a number 2, and saw the piece of shit in the toilet bowl. Wow, so beautiful. I told that story last Tuesday at the Cancer Support Association. They really like that, because many of them, when you've got cancer, you've got sort of bowels which are out of control, and they're always looking at what comes out of their backside as being something disgusting and nasty. So when I said, oh, it's beautiful, oh, that's a nice way of looking at it. Just one less problem people with undergoing chemotherapy have to deal with. So, but this is what happens when your mindfulness is really strong, because you're being content. Your energies are really strong. And whatever you look at, the breath is absolutely wonderful. Look and breathe, oh, this is so nice. You're getting into the meditation once you get to delightful breath. And what do? Content. You don't want anything. Happy here. It's amazing just how many people screw it up because they got to a nice deep state of meditation and they want more. Look, contentment is the whole path. Happy to be here. This is wonderful for me. Just having a nice delightful breath. Oh, this is great. So I don't want anything more. And when you build up that contentment, not wanting, putting things down, your mind becomes even more still. And that delight gets incredible. And that's when you see these beautiful nimittas come up in your mind. The lights. I always have to be careful when I talk about these, because straight away you get desire and craving. Wow, nimittas, deep meditation. I want that. I'm as good as anybody else. I've been coming here for 6 weeks now. I need nimittas. Oh my goodness, they come from contentment, not wanting. This is not the path of achieving something. It's a path of letting go, of disappearing. So you get very calm, content. When you don't want it, it comes. When you crave it, it's as far as the moon, you cannot reach it. So, just be content, happy. And you're in here for a beautiful ride. The more content you are, the deeper you go. And you find the path of meditation so different than everything else you do in your life. In your life, you strive, you work hard, you study, spend extra time, really put forth a lot of energy and effort to achieve. In meditation, that's a total waste of time. You go the opposite direction. Sitting here, being content, learning how to become still, and just being a passenger, never ever a driver, on this beautiful path of meditation. It's like the part of you which is most important, the doer, the controller, the control freak, that has to be let go of, that has to vanish. Which is why when I was in Sri Lanka just about 10 days ago, teaching meditation to 120 monks and 30 nuns, taught a meditation retreat for Sangha, and one of those monks was one of the most senior, six senior monks in Sri Lanka, Mahanayakas, like a Sangharaja, like a head monk, six head monks in Sri Lanka, and he was one of them. And the last words I said to him was, get lost. He understood, he was laughing. Get lost, disappear, vanish. With all your cravings and desires, get lost. So let's meditate now and get lost. Great fun being a monk. Is there any Sri Lankans here? Yes, they would understand. Saying get lost to a Mahanayaka was just pushing my luck, but he understood. So, sitting down. Close your eyes. We're not content at the beginning. We try to do a bit of contentment at the end. So I'm going to just put a cushion under my backside. I know many people say, well, you've already got your own cushion on there, you're so fat, but I need another cushion.
So, eyes closed. We start by feeling the body to encourage and establish our mindfulness on something which is important to us, which is our physical comfort. If you're going to sit meditation for 40 minutes, you better be comfortable at the beginning, otherwise it's going to hurt in the middle and in the end. So you check out your body. I usually begin by checking out my legs, making sure they're comfortably crossed, because I prefer sitting on the floor. If you like to sit on a chair, wonderful. It's as good as sitting on the floor. Once you've checked your legs, you're mindful of them, and you're kind enough to move, to adjust, if it's going to make it more comfortable. Awareness is the first thing, because otherwise you don't know what's going on down there. And then I go to my bottom, my butt, to check it's comfortable on top of the cushion. It wasn't to begin with, now it is. I can be aware of that. And then your mindfulness goes to your back. I like to stretch my back. When I start meditating, a good stretch feels really good. Endorphins get released in the bloodstream as soon as I stretch. And it means that any tightness, tension in my back just starts to vanish. People have back injuries, so if you need to lean back, lean forward, lean against the wall, whatever makes you the most comfortable, please do so. The only thing is we ask people not to lay down on a Saturday afternoon because they usually start snoring. And then I check my arms and hands. There's so many different positions for the hands. In fact, anyone who wants to investigate that, they're called mudras, M-U-D-R-A-S. And just anyone will do. You can't say one is better than the other. Like anything else, that people have all this, please excuse me, bullshit about this one is better than that one. Just what works for you. So feel your hands. Are they comfortable? Mindfulness will tell you. You're aware. And if you're not, if you think maybe you can get them more comfortable, out of kindness to yourself, please adjust. And then I always check my shoulders. Shoulders get a lot of tightness and tension. And that's where I imagine like strings, all those little muscles in my shoulders, like strings, and sometimes they pull tight. So I imagine both ends of a muscle, letting go of both ends, which releases tension. Nothing is being pulled. So just that little visualization, imagination, connected to muscles, means that the shoulders relax. Feels good. And I go to my head. Make sure not too far forward, not too far back. Just feel it, know it, out of kindness, maintain good position for your head. Position which feels the best. And lastly, mindful of the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. I feel those muscles. Right now, I can be aware of them so clearly. Once I'm aware of those muscles, I soon learn how to relax them. If you're fearful, striving, struggling, those muscles tighten up. To me, they're a signal that I'm tense. And it's so easy to relax. So my eyes have just got no tension around them. So my forehead, loose, tight, nothing being held, nothing being pulled or pushed or stretched. Let go of everything. And I feel this relaxation in my face. Not only am I relaxing my body, but I'm also doing this training, mindfulness of parts of my body together with kindness. The thing which will develop deep meditation. The kindness is also part of contentment. And then I just look at my body. There's always, maybe it's my age, I don't know, but there's always an ache or a pain somewhere. And these are aches and pains which I can't do anything about by adjusting my posture. They're inside. It's a tummy ache, a stretched muscle, knee not so good, back. Something inside of you, headache. So I focus on the most irritating feeling I can find in my body. Quick scan, find something irritating, and I zoom in on it. Once I zoomed in on it, I have mindfulness. Then I let it be. I let go. If I do that properly, real letting go, real letting be, I can be aware that the feeling eases. The irritation gets less of a problem. Even the pain softens. Your mind does interact with your body. And this is how you train your mind to interact with your body in such a way you can lessen, even go beyond inner pain. Stomach aches, irritable bowel syndrome, any other pain, cancers, arthritis, even psoriasis, all of these things. You can't get rid of them by changing your posture. But you can by being aware of them and relaxing, letting it be. You feel it, and it works. And once I've relaxed my body and it's really comfortable, you can spend longer relaxing your body if you want. But my body's pretty healthy today. Then I go to my mind, to my peace-o-meter, the thing which tells me how irritated or how peaceful I am. Just look at that. If you haven't done this before, give yourself a number, 1 to 10. 1 means you're very peaceful, 10 means you're really agitated. You're usually somewhere in between. It doesn't really matter what that number is. What matters is that you've now found the peaceometer. You're aware of it. Now see the attitude of your mind, what you do to bring that needle down, how you can be more peaceful. You will find contentment, happy to be here, no arguing,
no going off into the past, no planning of the future, no arguing with noises, just being kind, opening the door of your heart to this moment as it is. Not perfect, but good enough. Good enough. Good enough. You'll find your piezometer registers a lower and lower reading. You're moving towards peace. Not fault finding, but grateful. Grateful to be here, meditating. Not going anywhere. No stress of trying to achieve something. Just being here. When you're peaceful enough, you can invite the breath in. Just being aware of the breath as it comes in. Just one breath at a time, one part of the breath at a time. And knowing it as it goes out. Just something to sit down on, to rest the mind on. Something comfortable, like you rest your bum on the cushion. You rest your mind on the breath. You want breathing in peace without let go. Until the breath becomes delightful because your mindfulness is now strong. Because of contentment, stillness. Be patient and soon the breath will be delightful. Animitas, these beautiful lights will come next. But only if you don't want them. I'm going to be quiet now till the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How peaceful is your mind? How relaxed is your body? Why? I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong, you may open your eyes to end the meditation. Questions? We just want some overseas first of all today. Gives people a chance to get their mind going again. See what we have here. Some meditation questions from Victoria and from Indonesia. 2. I'm 20 years old. With a few hours of meditation a week could increase my life's productivity. Will I, at the end of my life, realize I've waited too many hours and regret it? Can you help me? This is well known that if you learn how to meditate, it increases your productivity. If you are going to be playing sport, you can't just think you're going to go to the tennis courts or to the football field or the basketball court and think that's all you need to do. You need to go to the gym to strengthen your body. And when you spend hours in the gym strengthening your body, that means you are more productive on the tennis court, on the football field. In the same way that we use meditation to train our mind, to rest our mind, to energize our mind, so that in life we can be far, far more productive. As a monk, I'm a very productive monk. It's amazing just the sort of stuff which I get up to and how much, you know, in even the spiritual world, what I achieve, what I get done. And I can only do that by practicing my meditation. You get tired, exhausted, sit down, meditate. Rest your brain. And afterwards it comes out really sharp, powerful, so I can work. So guaranteed, Joshua from Victoria, a few hours of meditation a week will increase your life's productivity. You'll achieve more. You won't be so stressed. You won't be so angry. You won't be such a, please excuse me, a pain in the ass for all the other people who live with you. Because when you are energized, when you are strong mindfulness, you tend not to get angry. Only people with weak mindfulness tend to get grumpy and angry. And from Indonesia, I always want to meditate before sleep, but I can't. I feel so sleepy after doing my activities, and I only have time to meditate before sleep. Which is all you need to do to meditate, is not just being in jhana or getting nimittas. Just when you are tired, lay down in your bed in Indonesia, because it's a very busy life. Lay down in your bed, make yourself comfortable, and then meditate lying down. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle, don't fight anything, relax, let go. And then you will get into a deep sleep. if you're worried before you go to sleep, either bringing into the bed all of the things which have happened that day, or bringing into the bed all your anxieties of what you have to face tomorrow. I call that taking your shoes into bed with you. Your left shoe represents the past, your right shoe the future. Only stupid people take their shoes into bed with them. So, what do you do if it's shoes or house shoes, slippers? You put your slippers under the bed before you climb on top and tuck yourself in. You don't put your slippers under the sheets. So, the left shoe, when you take your left shoe off, Wandi from Indonesia, think of that, your left shoe as the past. You tuck it under the bed, you don't take the past into the bed with you. The anxieties of the future, your right shoe, tuck that into your bed, under the bed as well. And don't take it under the covers. So you go into your bed carrying no past and no future. And you lay down there and just meditate, just relaxing your whole body. Then what happens? You have really efficient sleep. You sleep deeply. So when you wake up in the morning, you are relaxed. People don't have much time to sleep in our modern world, which means that you have to sleep efficiently. Learn how to sleep well. So when you do sleep, really good deep sleep. Don't worry so much. Then when you wake up in the morning, you're fresh. And then you may be able to find time to meditate when you first wake up in the morning. Fresh, relaxed. You don't need so much sleep because you sleep efficiently and deeply. So you can get an extra quarter of an hour when you first wake up. And whatever you do during the day, you do efficiently. That's why Wandi from Indonesia, they call this in Harvard Business School an investment of time. Great word, investment. An investment you get back with interest afterwards. So, half an hour meditation, it's not wasted time. You get that back with interest by getting 2 hours work done in one. So, half an hour you lost in meditation, 2 hours work done in 1 hour, let's make it more accurate, 3 hours work done in two. You made up an hour, so you're half an hour ahead. More time. More freedom. Use your mind efficiently. The reason why people don't have time, because they waste too much time by using their brain inefficiently. So no wonder they're not high achievers. Not like Ajahn Brahm. I'm a high achiever. Okay, so any questions from the floor here? If not from the floor, from the chairs. Yes, sorry. We've got to wait until the microphone comes.
I was in Singapore last November. I was visiting my sister and I caught up with one of my relatives. She's a Buddhist, she's pretty much diehard kind of Buddhist kind of person. But we have a little bit chat about meditation. Mm-hmm. She said, look, she has been meditating, but she has been sort of seeing her past life when she was meditating, and then she stopped. She was just doing the loving kindness meditations.
Yeah.
I asked her to sort of log into the YouTube and type in the questions that ask yourself. What sort of advice can you give it to her?
Okay, first of all, if you've only just started meditation, then what you're probably observing in your meditation is unlikely to be your past lives, just more like dreams, memories of movies or whether fantasies, dreams, because it's only when it's in deep meditation that those memories come up and they're real. There's a couple of things which would indicate that it was a real past life that you recall during the meditation. Number one, you have to be really peaceful, really still, very, very mindful, to the point that your body's disappearing, or disappeared. Before then, now, that is just the mind concocting stuff, creating stuff, not real. And that's usually what happens. And number two, it's very clear that it was your past life. No doubt whatsoever, not even a slight doubt. And during that experience, you can move around, you can ask questions. Which is why I encourage people, if you do have a past life experience, a real one, just ask yourself, when was that? Not just the century, I mean Thursday, 22nd of April, 1824 or something. Accurate. You should be able to do that. Where? What country? What place? What time of the day? What was my name? Get the information. Because many past lives are not that long ago, and you should be able to get some information which you can go to the local library and find out if it was true. So if you can't do that, it means it's not a real past life. It's just a bit of a dream. Yeah, sort of. You get some sort of vision of being killed or in some battlefield or something, but it's not really a past life. Number two, if there is a real past life and it is unpleasant, which often happens. Now, I've taught this for so many years, and sometimes some students say, yeah, I've got my past life, I would never want to do this again. Because the most recent past life, the closest to this life, is your previous life when you died. That's the closest memory. And most deaths are unpleasant. And so people have got, you know, legitimate past lives, the closest to this life, dying, and it's unpleasant because in the past life it's not like imagining it, you're right back there, experiencing what you experienced then, smelling what you're smelling then, seeing what you saw then. And it means if it's a feeling, it's painful, and that's very unpleasant. But all you need to do, and I keep on mentioning this to people, just have the thought, the little instruction, earlier please, and just go back a bit earlier, before your death, which is much more pleasant. So just doing something like that, you go back earlier, and it becomes quite fascinating. Many people actually pay hypnotherapists to try and do that, try and find out who you were before. It's a fascinating thing to find out. And it also proves to you, once and for all, that reincarnation is actually true. You know, other people can't convince you. Even if you're a Buddhist, there's many Buddhists, they like everything about Buddhism, but reincarnation, for some reason, they've got a blockage there. And that was really fascinating, where that blockage comes from, because it's irrational. It's not scientific, it's just a block, a bigotry. And so, if you find it out for yourself, then of course, it's obvious. If you were reborn again, it'd be really weird if you were the only person in the world who was reincarnated and everybody else wasn't. If it's happened to one, happened to everybody. So anyway, that's what you can ask her to do. First of all, it's unlikely, unless she was in a very, very deep meditation. So it's just the mind messing around. And, that's right, I was in the retreat I was giving to monks and nuns, you know, professional meditators over in Sri Lanka, I did mention sort of a little something, I've got time to talk about this now, which can happen when you get to that type of deep meditation state. The body is just very, very distant, may not have disappeared yet, but bodily feelings, sounds are like a long distance away because you're focused inside. And your mind can get very strong. And he concocted all sorts of visions and images up. And those images, at that particular stage of meditation, just when you haven't got very, very deep and powerful, they are just mind creations. And all sorts of stuff can come up. And I tell the story that there was one occasion, years and years and years ago, when I was meditating. I don't know if this was when I was still in Thailand or just came here, but roughly about that time. So I've been here over 30 years now, 33 years, I think. So this must be about 34, 35 years ago, 32 years ago, somewhere about that time. Meditating, really nice and peaceful, but not really that deep yet. And I saw, you know, in your mind's eye, like a vision, it was a monster. A monster with these big bulging eyes, almost coming out of their sockets, red on the outside. You can see the little irises, you know, in the center, and big white and red. And its tongue was coming out. And it had fangs, not teeth, like pointed fangs, dripping red stuff, which I assume was blood. And it had a necklace of skulls going, when I do this to kids, they love this. I'm being silly again. But, you know, it was a monster right in front of me. Really, for most people, it would scare them. But, you know, I know my meditation. I've been doing it such a long time. I know this was mind created. If I created it, I can mess around with it. So that's what I did, straight away, not scared at all. And straight away, I just thought, let's put some sunglasses over these bulging eyes. And just one thought, that's what it took, didn't even need to say anything. And sunglasses appeared in this vision, just like Elvis Presley, you know, just with big black sunglasses, so I couldn't see its eyes. Then its mouth, the teeth. When I was a school kid, like many naughty school kids, you'd have a picture, you'd doodle, you'd black out some teeth, you know, on the portrait of Queen Elizabeth or something. Get into trouble for that, but it's good fun. So I blacked out some of the teeth of the monster, so it needed to go to the dentist pretty fast. Put a cigarette out of its mouth. And what else did I do? That's right, a hat. A straw hat with a flower out of it. And I just needed to think of this, and it just appeared. So what was once a monster was this really cool dude monster with Ray-Bans, with a stupid flower hat on him and a few teeth missing. And it was so hilarious. I just laughed. And that monster never came back again. That's how you deal with frightening stuff, especially monsters. Humiliate them. You get so humiliated they never want to come back and play with you anymore. And that's how I got rid of this stuff. So if you are getting any frightening images in your meditation, play around with it. Mess around. Because they're created by your mind, you can create all sorts of stuff with them. And if you have a playful mind instead of a fearful mind, then you can have some great fun. And you can prove and know for yourself that these are nothing to be afraid of, just a little bit of entertainment during a boring meditation retreat. What a wonderful hour that was. So, that's a little bit of how to deal with that stuff. Are there any other questions here? Okay, it is just gone 4:15, so I should keep to the time, and we can now pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And then there is a sutta class tomorrow for those of you who come to the afternoon Sunday sutta classes from 3 to 4:15, roughly. Okay.